Hunter's Snare by Josh Reynolds. Chapter 1. The Tau base was not hard to spot, even through the swirling wind-borne snows, and hidden as it was amongst the harsh-edged crags and white-capped slopes of Rime Crag. It rose out of the snowy rock like a blister, and the peaks it nestled beneath, parasite-like. It was too smooth, too serene for the wilderness it sought to dominate. In that way, the Tau Bastion was much like those who had built it. They sought to inflict an unnatural and ill-fitting harmony upon the universe, a universe which was not theirs, not by right of blood or battle, and to force around a manufactured Aelith that which had required no centre, or rather, had many centres to choose from. They wished to tame the storm. That alone proved them mad at best and monstrous at worst. These thoughts were uppermost in Corsaro Khan's mind as his bike hurtled through the driving snow towards the Tau Bastion, the icy flakes melting against the bare flesh of his scarred cheeks and stinging his golden-hued eyes. He could have worn his helmet, but the thought of even that little amount of constriction upon his senses was anathema to the huntsman. Protective photo lenses be damned. The air of Agrellon was so toxic that it seared even his altered lungs, but the pain only added spice to the experience. He'd conquered worse worlds than this, poisonous atmosphere and all. The captain of the third, Minghan, of the White Scars, and the Ordu's master of the hunt, leaned into the snow, glorying in its bite as he urged his bike to greater speed. The enemy fortress loomed up, growing larger as he drew nearer. Lights flashed across the top of the outer wall. The enemy had spotted them at last. Instinctively, he leaned to the side, and his borrowed bike responded with a growl of its engines. Wheels skidded, and the pulse burst seared the air where he'd been a half second later. More followed, and he guided his steed through the oscillating web of weapons fire with the grace of the Bearcut, one of the great golden-feathered eagles which nested in the mountains of Tregoris. To Corsaro's eyes, the bursts of energy moved slowly. He did not bother to speak a warning into the subcutaneous vox implant mounted beneath his jaw. Those who travelled in his wake could see as well as he, or he would not have chosen them. Each was a warrior without parallel, even among a chapter which was reckoned full of such, and their trophy racks were as heavy with skulls and scalps as his own. If the Emperor had decided that the lives of some of them must be claimed as the blood price for a successful hunt, well, so it was, and would ever be. And this hunt would be successful. He had sworn such during the rites of howling, and had come to the Damocles Gulf and the hive world of Agrellon to see to the keeping of that oath. He would take the head of the alien known as Shadow Sun and hang it from his lodgepole, or else he would die in the attempt. Her ugly Xenos skull would be added to the White Road, to sit sentry with the rest of the chapter's enemies. A sudden urgency gripped him. Enthusiasm flushed caution from his veins. It was always the same when a hunt drew to a close. The feeling of anticipation, the joy of the kill-to-be, roared through him, prodding him on, like spurs in the flesh of a bulky horse. There was no greater pleasure than this, the culmination of months of patience and focus, the release of the killing stroke across his prey's neck. He had tracked Shadow Sun across Agrellon, from one battle zone to the next, from bunker to trench to bastion, harrying her trail. If he could take her head, the Tau would waver. Without her cunning, they would be easy meat. And she was cunning. That she had avoided and outpaced him this long was proof enough of that. He had nearly had her head at Black Shale Ridge. But he had her now. She was cornered, in a trap of her own making. And he would have her head before the sun rose.
"Old man, rattle their paddock," he growled.
Besides the bikes that rode at his heels, his hunting party included a quartet of heavier vehicles, Two rhinos, a razorback, and a whirlwind. Their engines adapted for greater speed so that they might keep up with Corsaro's bike-mounted demi-company. Three of the four carried those Hunt brothers who were content to fight on foot, rather than from the back of an iron steed, and the fourth was there to ensure that they could do so with the blessings of the Emperor and the Great Khan. The combead in his ear squawked, as a familiar voice acknowledged the order, and a moment later fire lit the night from somewhere behind him. Old Shatterhand at his appointed task, and unspoken joy, the busting of bunkers and the shattering of bastions. Corsaro smiled as the face of his second-in-command flitted across the surface of his mind. Wrinkled, white-haired Semaka, whom aspirants and Khans of the Ordu alike called Old Shatterhand, but never to his face, for even now, old as he was, he had a fist that could fell a dreadnought and a snarl that could strip the ceremonial unguents from a suit of armour. Semaka had refused, and quite pungently, to return with the rest of the company to reinforce Agrellan Prime in the wake of Shadow Sun's escape from Black Shale Ridge. Where his Khan went, so did he, even if, in his opinion, said Khan was a puling whelp of an aspirant, with fewer scars than was healthy and a decided lack of respect for the vaunted wisdom of elders such as the Stormseer Sudaber and Semaka himself. Despite this, Corsaro was gladdened to have the old man along on the hunt. Too many of those who had stepped forward at his call were like the Bearcoot, bloodthirsty and glory-hungry, as he himself was, even after all this time as master of the hunt. Semaka was a calming presence, and a bulwark against more of the same foolishness which had enabled Shadow Sun to squirm out of his grip the last time they'd clashed. The wall ahead of him disintegrated into burning chunks, some of which spattered across the white-daubed ceramite plates of his power armor. Corsaro laughed as more fire split the snow and darkness, and the thunderous cries of the Emperor's hunting eagles boomed across Rime Crag. Let the Xenos cower in their burrow for as long as they might. The hunters had come to root them out. He tapped the firing stud for the twin-linked bolters mounted on the front of the bike as he rode through the welcoming flames to herald his arrival. Alien weapons opened up as his bike cleared the rubble-strewn opening and slewed about. The flat disc shapes of a number of Quathi, their gun drones, bobbed into view, descending from the walls and rising from the snow that lay like a blanket across the inner courtyard of the bastion. It was an insult that these soulless automatons should be the ones to greet them. One more insult to add to the list of Shadow Sun's crimes against the Imperium. He gunned the bike towards the largest knot of drones and tapped the firing stud again. Several burst apart, struck by the bolter shells. The remainder swooped to meet him, the pulse carbines slung beneath their flat bodies, firing without pause. Corsaro drew the curved sword sheathed on the side of his bike, activating its power cell, and the long, wide blade was suddenly enveloped in a lethal haze of disruptive energy as he whipped it around and bisected a drone that had drifted too close. The sword was called Moonfang, and, like the bike he rode, it was a relic of his chapter and possessed a lethal spirit all of its own. The sword had claimed the lives of 1,000 of the Emperor's enemies, but it was never sated. The hunter's purr of energy that writhed about the length of the blade was mirrored in the growl of his steed engines and in his own soul calling out for battle. With a roar of joy, Corsaro Khan gave in to the call. Thirsk, champion of the Dark Hunter's Space Marine chapter, leapt out into the cacophony of battle with some relief, as Torgun's Smile, the rhino transport he'd been riding in, rumbled into the bastion courtyard through the breach in its outer wall. He thumbed the activator switch on the power axe in his hand and spun the brutal-looking weapon in a lazy arc. He hated being inside the boxy transport. Better to trust his two legs than any rumbling, squalling machine. Though, that said, He didn't mind having a certain thickness of armored hull plates between him and the guns of the enemy. One of the enemy's Quarthi raced towards him, spitting death. A number of Quarchin terms had become lodged in his vocabulary, like errant kernels trapped between teeth. The language of Tregoris had a rhythm all its own, far different to the crude dialect of Gothic that he and his brothers used for their own battle cant. It was musical in its way, and unless your mind and ear were trained to it, it was almost impossible to unravel the full complexity. Bursts of energy struck his dark-hued power armor, but he ignored them, confident in his armor's ability to absorb the punishment. As the Quarthi drew within arm's reach, Thirsk swatted it to the ground with a casual swipe of his axe, and then stepped on it, crushing the fragile mechanism easily.
"I hate these things," he said,
his voice becoming a harsh rasp as it was filtered through the respirator vox grill of his helmet.
"They're more irritating than Phobian nettle flies."
He looked around, taking in the structure that rose up around him. It was somewhat disorientating, being all swooping curves and rounded edges, rather than the sharp angles he was used to in Imperial fortifications. The Tau thought in curves and soft angles, he'd been told, and everything they built was like a bubble atop a trickle of water. The bastion was mostly wall, with a central command center that was latched to the rocky slope like a splatter of ice. The latter was dotted with a profusion of antenna and receivers.
"But easily dispatched, brother,"
a simile-distorted voice said. Thirsk glanced sideways at the speaker. Like himself, the warrior was a space marine, built for battle and armored in the Emperor's grace. The other space marine was neither Khan nor captain. Instead, the blue pauldron and vambrace of his right arm and the crystalline force hood that hung over his bare head, as well as the ornate and highly stylized force staff he clutched tightly in his right hand, proclaimed him a Stormseer, a librarian of the White Scars chapter, a Zadjin Aga, a master of lightning and the spirits of land, air, and prophecy. His armor was covered in line upon line of delicate Quarchin characters, so many, in fact, that the white parts were almost grey. A trio of thick, curved knives were attached to his equipment belt, their bejeweled sheaths gleaming in the light cast by the battle. The Stormseer sniffed, patted the knives, and gestured.
"There's another one!"
Thirsk heard the whine of anti-gravity motors and spun, chopping the drone in half as it swooped towards them. He turned back.
"See, Ambergai? Nettle flies," he said.
"More like Tregorian wasps," Ambergai said. "But I gather your meaning. One stinging insect is much the same as another."
Thirsk knew that the Stormseers were unlike the Codex-trained librarians of most other chapters. In any other chapter, Ambergai would have been a codicier, a strategist and advisor. Among the White Scars, he served a similar role, his calm counsel keeping Corsaro Khan from making a misstep in his hunt. But he was more in the way of a shaman or holy fool. They said he ate ghosts and spat lightning the same way his superior, Sudaber, commanded the allegiance of the winds. Thirsk had yet to experience either of those things while in Ambergai's company, but he looked forward to asking what a ghost tasted like. Thirsk stepped aside as a squad of space marines trooped out of the rhino, their bolters at the ready. They quickly went to work isolating and dispatching the swarms of drones accosting the invaders. The Xenos devices weren't much of a threat without support from living troops, but they could still prove deadly in the right numbers, even to a fully armored space marine.
"And speaking of stinging insects, Jebe looks as if he's having fun."
Thirsk glanced in the direction Ambergai had indicated and snorted in amusement. The company champion of the White Scars, Third Company, did indeed look as if he were enjoying himself, surrounded as he was by an oscillating ring of gun drones. Jebe was rangy and proud-featured. Like his Khan, he disdained the use of a helmet, save when absolutely necessary, and his dark topknot whipped about him like a halo as he leapt and spun, his sword blocking the gun-drone's shots and deflecting them back at their firers. He had leapt from his bike as soon as he had entered the compound, ready to engage the enemy one-on-one. He moved swiftly and with a dancer's grace, though there was a feral lethality to every step of this particular dance. Jebe had fought and beaten his weight in lesser khans for the right to become company champion, a fact he rarely went long without mentioning. He whirled in place, and the last trio of gun drones swarming about him dispatched themselves with his aid.
"Nicely done," Thirst called out.
Jebe glanced at him, sniffed, spat, and turned to look for something else to kill. Thirsk looked back at Amberguy.
"I don't think he likes me."
"He doesn't,"
the Stormseer said. Thirsk didn't bother to ask why. He knew the reason well enough. Like Jebe, he was a company champion of his own chapter's fourth company. Jebe, for whatever reason, took that as an insult to his prowess. There was a competitive streak in the warrior that grated on Thirsk's nerves.
"And what about you?"
the Dark Hunter asked, leaning his axe across his shoulder. Jebe wasn't the only one who was unhappy with his presence. At a loss for what to do with him, Corsaro Khan had made him Amberguy's designated keshig, or bodyguard, for the duration of the hunt. Given the fierce competition among the battle brothers of the Ordu for such an honor, it hadn't engendered any affection for Thirsk amongst them.
"I find you off-putting and overly talkative, but not offensive," Amberguy said. "I thought it was a tradition of your chapter to fight in total silence."
"Yes, but I'm not fighting right now, am I?" Thirsk said. "Besides which, you White Scars are hardly silent. I'm simply trying to fit in."
He spun his axe again and watched as the White Scars took the base with a speed that would have awed any but a space marine. They did not maintain the comm silence that Thirsk's own battle brothers considered a battlefield rule. Jokes, snatches of song and laughter, altogether too much laughter for Thirsk's liking, clogged the Vox channel, most of it in Korchin. The White Scars did not care if the enemy overheard their jocularity, given that no enemy yet had managed to translate their native tongue that they knew of. Thirsk had never particularly enjoyed the quiet, but the White Scars seemed to revel in noise, be it singing, talking, or merely the cry of the wind or the growl of engines. Just one more difference between the founding chapter and their successor. But there were similarities as well. The Chagorian way of life wasn't wholly alien to a Phobian, and it was those connections which the White Scars insisted on exploring in order to ensure that their successors kept to the proper way of things.
"Well, that is why I'm here, after all. It's the Dark Hunter's turn to kneel at the trophy rack and swear fealty to the Khan of Khans," he said.
Once every cycle, the White Scars' successor chapters met and pitted their chosen champions against each other in the Rite of Blooding. The winner was sent to join the White Scars for a full cycle, to learn all that the Founders had to teach them.
"It's not about fealty, cousin," Amberguy said. "It's about tradition. The traditions of Chagoris, of the steppes and wild, thunderstruck hills, of the plains, wind and wildfire that are in your blood, whether you are Chagorian or Phobian, whether you are a brother of the Stormlords, the Marauders, or the Solar Hawks. We are all sons of Jagatai, and it was his decree that all those who share his blood know the traditions of the world which bore him in fire, blood, and glory."
Amberguy tapped the head of his staff against the Imperial Aquila on Thirsk's chestplate.
"We are many tribes, gathered beneath a single horsetail banner, and we all ride the white road together, guided by his wisdom, so that our blades may shed blood as one."
"Do you rehearse that speech, or does such poetry flow naturally from your lips?" Thirsk asked.
He watched as the White Scars, who'd been aboard the same rhino as himself, moved quickly towards the entryway of the Xenos Bastion, while their bike-mounted brethren herded and harried the remaining gun drones to a safe distance for ease of dispatch. Another squad had disembarked from the second rhino, the Talwar of Shiban, and moved to join the first. The wheel and the spoke, that was what they called it. Those mounted, the wheel, drove the enemy back and kept them running, while those on foot, the spoke, set up a temporary hardpoint which the bikes could retreat to if necessary, or, as in this case, took an objective while the enemy was distracted. It was, as with all of the chapter's tactics, simple enough at first glance, but became more complex the longer you studied it, with dozens of moving parts working towards a central goal in perfect harmony.
You see? Off-putting, Amberguy said. Even Vairen wasn't so frustrating when he was with us. And the Stormlords have as much appreciation for poetry as they do for orcs.
Thirsk watched as Jebe joined the squads at the entryway and felt a brief flicker of envy. The champion barked an order. One of the White Scars produced the round canister shape of a melter bomb. He tossed it to Jebe, who caught it, activated the grav clamp on the bomb's canister, and slapped it against the doors. The entryway exploded a moment later, and the two squads entered the bastion, Jebe in the lead.
Vairen can barely speak Gothic, let alone comprehend poetry, Thirsk said.
He had fought alongside the champion of the Stormlord's Third Company during the Siege of Vought. He'd been impressed by Vairen's single-minded murderousness, if not his personality.
I once saw him headbutt an orc to death, and without his helmet.
He settled his axe in the crook of his arm. Above and behind him, the storm bolters mounted on the cupola of the rhino added to the cacophony as they blew a swarm of gun drones from the air. There weren't many drones left, and those that remained seemed confused and easy prey for the bikers.
Have you noticed a distinct lack of enemy presence here? Or is this usual for the, what do you call them?
Kamar! It means noseless. And no,
Amberguy said.
No to which, Thirsk said.
He stepped aside as a spinning, smoking gun drone struck the side of the rhino and exploded. Fragments of metal struck his armor and fell to the ground.
Jebe has secured the bastion,
Kosaro Khan said, as his bike slewed to a halt before them, scattering grit and snow.
I would have you by my side when I pierce the beast's heart, Stormseer.
After a brief hesitation, he added,
And you as well, cousin. I would see how the Dark Hunters earn their name.
It would be an honor, my Khan, Thirsk said.
Kosaro gazed at him for a moment, and then nodded tersely.
Amberguy, call the lightning and clear the air,
he said, gesturing to the remaining gun drones, which continued to hover and fire at the White Scars.
I grow tired of sparring with these toys. I never thought you'd ask, Amberguy said.
He gripped his staff in both hands and held it up. The air took on a sharp metallic odor and seemed to congeal for a moment, as if every molecule of oxygen and water had suddenly contracted. Then Amberguy stabbed the ground with the butt of his staff, and the air was filled with azure strands of electricity, which arced from drone to drone, frying the sensitive circuitry of each one in turn. The remaining drones in the courtyard fell to the ground, their hulls charred black.
Impressive, Thirsk said.
Yes, consider that the next time you insult my poetry, Amberguy said,
tapping the Dark Hunter's shoulder plate with the tip of his staff.
Unduly noted, Stormseer, Thirsk said.
Kosaro led the way into the alien bastion, as was his right as master of the hunt. Amberguy followed, in his shadow as ever, and off to the side, the Dark Hunter. He did not know what to make of the Phobian yet. He did not ride, nor did he seem to understand their way of war. He might as well have been a scion of Russ or Dawn for all the kinship Corsaro felt with him. He reflected, not for the first time, on the Great Khan's insistence that they welcome these strangers in all but blood into their tents and war councils. He understood the reasoning for it, but that didn't make it any easier to take. Jebe felt the same way and took no pains to hide it.
"What is he doing here?"
he said as Corsaro approached. If the Dark Hunter noticed the rancor in his tone, he gave no sign of it, which only fueled Jebe's dislike if Corsaro were any judge. The Dark Hunter used silence as a weapon, deflecting and antagonizing in equal measure with his obtuse refusal to speak to any but those he absolutely had to. He just watched and listened, and it was getting on everyone's nerves. Then, given that he could barely speak Korchin, that might have been a blessing.
"If he is not here, how will he learn?"
Corsaro said, stepping past the champion. He had no time for Jebe's petulance, not now. The explosion that had allowed them ingress had blackened the entry chamber, warping the walls and causing the floor to bubble and buckle. Ruptured power conduits dangled from the ceiling, spitting and crackling, and the strange flat glow panels the Xenos used for illumination had cracked and gone dark. The whole place stank of tau. The sloping walls and soft curves did not offend his senses as much as they might once have, however. There was much to learn from an enemy's architecture, as there was from their art and language. To properly stalk prey, one had to learn how said prey's mind worked. And the best way to do that was to study how they built their lairs. Orcs constructed crude but sturdy structures, where the Khrud burrowed in like mites, and the Tau changed the landscape to suit themselves.
"Status, Togus,"
he said, looking at one of the space marines who stood near the bulkhead that led into the heart of the base, their bolters held ready. The way into the command center was open. It was all very inviting, like meat dragged beneath the nose of a beast of prey.
"No hostile contact, my Khan," the warrior said. "Not even any alarms." "The internal defenses were offline as well,"
Jebe said quietly.
"It was as if they expected us to get in."
"Odd,"
Corsaro said. Unease filled him. This wasn't the first empty base they had attacked, but this one was different. Someone had gone to a lot of trouble to make it look as if it were occupied. The others had had automatic defenses, but nothing like what they'd encountered outside.
"Bait for the beast," he thought again.
"Unlikely is what it is,"
a new voice said. Corsaro didn't turn.
"Is that a warrior's considered wisdom or merely the grumblings of an unappreciated elder?"
he asked. Semeca grunted. He stumped into the entry chamber, his helmet tucked under his arm. His topknot and moustaches were as white as the snow outside, and his skin was the colour of leather, making the scars on his cheeks stand out all the more.
"Well,"
he said,
"are they here or not?"
His armor was of an older mark, and studded with rivets. The chest plate was covered in ceremonial embossment, depicting scenes from ancient victories of the Ordu. The battle plate had been worn on 1,000 battlefields, even before it had been gifted to Semeca. Like the warrior who wore it, it was a relic of the Ordu. Corsaro frowned and stepped through the interior bulkhead, one palm resting on Moonfang's pommel. Even sheathed, the sword vibrated slightly, as if it couldn't wait to be free once more. If he had his way, that would be soon. Though not apparently soon enough. The lack of resistance nagged at him. All of the intelligence they had gathered had pointed to Rhyme Crag as where Shadow Sun would be. But here they were, and she was nowhere to be seen. Had his enemy already fled? Or had she never been here in the first place? Was this another distraction? She was good at that, he was forced to admit. She thought in layers, something a Trigorian could respect, even if she was a Xenos witch. Shadow Sun was more dangerous than his fellow commanders in the defense of Agrellan had wanted to admit. Patriarch Tybalt's dismissal, he understood. It offended the old knight commander to imagine that a mere alien could threaten his forces. Strachan, the commander of the Katachan regiment deployed to Agrellan, was a different matter. He'd faced the Tau before and knew better. Shadow Sun was the linchpin, the central mind of the Tau strategy. That was why he had left the defense of Agrellon to Tybalt, Strachan, and Sudaba, and set himself the goal of taking her head. Without her, the Xenos would falter. The problem was she knew that as well as he did, and thus far she had refused all attempts to bring her to battle after the encounter at Blackshale Ridge, including now, it seemed. He gave a grunt of frustration and looked around. The command center was online, but empty of life. A holographic projection of Agrellon, as seen from orbit, floated over a wide, flat dais, and the circumference of the room was dominated by the computer consoles and view screens that lined the walls. The latter had been gutted. The only light in the room came from the hologram. Corsaro swept a hand through the hologram of Agrellon, and the image wavered and changed, from an orbital perspective to a sub-stratospheric view. Symbols that he didn't recognize were clustered about Rhyme Crag. He touched one, and the image changed again. He blinked in surprise as he recognized a picked capture of his face. A red circle, far too much like a targeting icon for his liking, surrounding the image of him.
"We should have brought the Khwarezmian," Semeca said, looking around. "He has a way with these Xenos toys."
Corsaro smiled at the thought of the commander of his reserve force, Gar Chai, the Khwarezmian, whose folk had not been steppe riders as Corsaro's clan had been, indeed as most White Scars clans had been, but instead the armored hillmen of the Khwarezm, who thundered to war, not on beasts built for speed, but for strength. Of all the diverse tribes and clans of Chogoris, the Khwarezm had held out the longest against the armies united by the Khan of Khans, and had bought their freedom first, earning it in iron and fire. Gar Chai was a true son of the Khwarezm, built like a thunderbolt and with a mind like water. He was the opposite, in many ways, of old Shatterhand.
"Gar Chai is more useful where he is," Corsaro murmured, still examining the hologram.
The Khwarezmian and his landspeeders had been deployed to sweep the basin craters to the south and east of Rhyme Crag in order to test the Tau defences there. They were due to rejoin the main force in 12 hours, but could be recalled sooner if necessary. He and his Hunt brothers had harried the Tau across Agrellon, striking hard and fading away before the Xenos could mount more than a token resistance. They had made great wounds in the invaders' infrastructure, opening their lines and forcing them to regroup and delay their stratagems. But for every bunker destroyed and every communications array silenced, the enemy seemed to have 3 more at peak operation by the time the White Scars had returned to the hunt. The gaps they had created in the front lines of the enemy had long since closed behind them, he knew, even as he knew that they were being drawn deeper into Tau-controlled territory. Shadow Sun had led them on a merry chase, but this night should have seen the end of it. So where was she? Corsaro considered ordering his men to sweep the base again, but discarded the thought before it reached his lips. He already knew that they would find nothing. The base was running on auxiliary power, and it had been stripped of everything of value. It had been abandoned, but pains had been taken to hide that fact. The alien mind was a mystery, and their tactics and strategies seemed bereft of meaning, even to one who had fought them as often as he had. But he knew enough to know that just because a thing looked one way did not make it so. He straightened.
"The base is empty, but it was made to look occupied, to draw us in. Why?" "I see only 2 reasons for a ploy such as this,"
Semeca said. He looked at Corsaro.
"I'm sure you do as well."
He hiked a thumb at Jebe.
"Even he sees them." "What?"
Jebe said.
"It's a distraction," Thirsk said.
It was the first time the Dark Hunter had spoken since they had entered the base. He tapped the hologram dais with his axe. Corsaro nodded.
Got a trap, he growled.
As soon as he said the word, he felt it, and cursed himself for not recognizing it sooner. He had been too focused, too intent on his prey, not to see the trap she was leading him into. Ryan Craig could simply have been a diversion to pull the White Scars out of response range for a planned assault, and thus deprive the Imperial forces of an asset. But there was no more Shadow Sun's way than it was his own. She was not an orc. The witch could think. The Tau had the advantage of mobility, an advantage he and his huntsmen negated, or at least countered. They were too dangerous to the Tau to be left riding free. The conclusion was reached, and the decision made in microseconds.
To your vehicles. We must ride. Semeca, alert the Khwarezmian. We'll need support.
He led them out of the command center and hurried back towards the courtyard. Even as he stepped out into the cold night air, he knew he had been too slow. The trap had been sprung, and its jaws had already snapped closed. It happened fast. The snowy air blurred above the courtyard, and his ears caught the hum of alien technology, offensive and smooth.
Take cover!
He roared, but too late. A White Scar was flung backwards from his idling bike, his cuirass melted to slag, and superheated blood issuing from the grill on the front of his helmet in a burst of red-tinted steam. Corsaro cursed. To their credit, the others reacted in the millisecond between their brother's death and his collapse, swinging off their bikes and pulling the heavy machines over to act as improvised cover as they fell flat upon the snowy ground. Strange, hunched shapes flickered in and out of view through the gaps in the wall, stalking towards the bastion. Corsaro could hear the familiar, waspish hum of Tau weapons being readied to fire. Corsaro swung back around the edge of the ruptured bulkhead and drew his bolt pistol.
Ambush!
He said, looking at the others.
Good,
Jebe said, drawing his blade.
I was getting tired of killing machines.